Harry the Hammer with further review by Housecrafters. Housecrafters provides complete home renovation services with one call does it all. That includes exterior home services like roofing, siding, home additions, and much more. Call 716-646-NAIL.
For the Buffalo News, I'm Jay Skursky, joined by executive sports editor Perrin Keyes. Perrin, we're back from Cleveland, and the Bills are back with a 23-20 victory over the Browns, improving to 11-4. Still have not yet clinched a playoff berth, although that can happen as early as tonight, depending on what happens with Indianapolis. Nevertheless, though, playoffs all but assured at this point. However, I would say this was not a game that left fans feeling particularly great about heading into the postseason, particularly on offense. We'll get to that and some of the issues that they had moving the football, particularly in the second half later in the show. But I think we should start with the defense. That was an area that I wrote about last week. And this game followed a very familiar script for the defense in that it started slow. The Browns marched down the field on the first drive relatively with ease and score a touchdown. Probably some more issues than you would like defensively, again, early in this game. But as they so often have, they made adjustments, they found answers, they got a couple of timely takeaways. It was a turn-back-the-clock performance, I thought, for Jordan Poyer and Matt Milano to an extent. Tre'Davious White, we'll add him in there as well. And then Greg Rousseau really kind of took over the game at the end, and that was who Catherine Fitzgerald featured in her article today at the Buffalo News. But, Perrin, what'd you make defensively of the overall effort and then maybe some of the individual efforts that I mentioned there?
Well, first and foremost, just as you said, Jay, I don't think they're going to send tape from this game off to Canton or, for that matter, to the Buffalo Bills Hall of Fame or Ring of Honor. This is one of these things where you just say, okay, if you're a Bills fan, you're glad that they got out of Cleveland with a win, and they will take that and they will move on. You mentioned a slow start by the defense, a slow start by the team, however you want to slice it. This is now the seventh consecutive game the Bills have started from behind. In other words, the opponent has scored first. So I don't know if they want to change their philosophy there. Maybe they want to win the coin toss at all costs and then start off with a flea flicker just to get that out of the way. Figure out some sort of trick play just for the Bills to actually play with the lead to start out. But yeah, no, just as you mentioned, the opening drive, Shedeur Sanders looked very, very comfortable. He started 5 of 5. Their ground game did okay with Quinshon Judkins before he suffered what was obviously a very gruesome injury. And this was, not to take it too far, but this was exactly what you didn't want in a game like this in terms of letting what is now a 3-12 team get comfortable and feel like they, they're in the fight. You want to get up on them 17-0 or something like that. And maybe they're thinking about making plans to get the hell out of Cleveland for the winter and head off to Cancun or wherever, but didn't work that way. It got better as the game went on, just as you mentioned, and particularly in the fourth quarter. This was, I don't think it's, too much of a leap to say that if this wasn't Greg Rousseau's most dominant performance, the only other one that really matched it in terms of just sack output was the 2024 season opener against Arizona when he had 3 sacks. But this was a 7 quarterback hits for Greg Rousseau in addition to his 2.5 sacks. And just as you said, at some point he really did take the game over. The Browns had a chance, obviously, to go down and take a lead and win this game late in the affair. But Greg Rousseau made sure that didn't happen, and he got a little help from his friends, of course. But really, it was a physical performance, I think, certainly in the second half. Jordan Poyer, just as you said, 11 tackles, 6 solos. He was in there. Rousseau had 2.5 sacks. He was in there for that half a sack. Broke up a pass. He put a couple of good hits on players on the perimeter, as did Matt Milano, of course. He was the one, not that he wanted to have this happen, of course, but he was the one who put that devastating hit on Quinshon Judkins. So Cole Bishop has a nice game. Terrell Bernard, in his return, has a pretty nice game, 7 tackles. And just as you said, Tre'Davious White not only has four tackles, but plays physical out there in the secondary, putting a big hit on a receiver to break up a pass. So in the aggregate, it's enough to get you by. In the 30,000-foot zoom-out view, you say, well, this is not going to be enough to get you past the Patriots or the Broncos or whoever it is that the Bills face to start off the playoffs, presuming that they do go ahead and make it there. So plenty to work on, but not all games in the NFL, as we know, are games that are going to head off to the Smithsonian. So you'll take this, you'll take the W. And if you can believe it, the Bills, as we mentioned before, are still on pace if they finish off these final two games, which will not be easy, of course, against Philadelphia to start, and then against the Jets, we'll see. But if they finish that out, they're 13-4, which is exactly where they were last year. The only thing missing, of course, is in all likelihood not having come down with the second seed in the AFC East Championship.
Harry the Hammer goes to work.
Harry the Hammer here from House Crafters, and I am one happy hammer. We just finished this addition and kitchen, and it's beautiful. Look at this place. It's gorgeous. If you have a remodeling project in mind, a kitchen, bathroom, or mother-in-law apartment, one call really does do it all at House Crafters. For a free estimate, call House Crafters at 646-NAIL.
So, Jay, on to some of the more positive things in this game, if you're a Bills fan. Well, I say positive. Again, positive in the 30,000-foot view, which is to say that James Cook is maybe at the moment playing like he's the best running back in the NFL. And certainly something that if you're a Bills fan, you've got to love, particularly when we're talking about games in December and into January, into the playoffs, when you need a ground game in what is likely to be not so great weather. What can you say about James Cook? 100 yards rushing in the first half on a mere 9 carries. I don't know what there is to say that we haven't said about James Cook to this point. He's, as I said, he's playing like the best running back in the NFL. And, you know, some of the things that really stand out about him is he's sort of rounding into a true star veteran now in the NFL is, you know, he's got speed and he's light on his feet and he can change directions on a dime. But you know, take those two touchdowns. You know, that's sort of him in full, which is to say he puts a couple of moves on guys in the secondary. He changes direction very well at the end of a long run. And then on the second touchdown, he's extra effort and not afraid for a guy who's not, 260 pounds, you know, a la Jerome Bettis or whoever, for a guy who's a little on the tall and a little on the light side. And I say light sort of in air quotes, you know, for somebody who's still plenty big enough to play running back in the NFL, obviously. He's not afraid to get his head down and get dirty and make the extra effort in some traffic. He's powerful for his size. And so he has 100 yards in the first half rushing. And the next thing you know, as Lance Lysowski pointed out, he had a mere 5 touches for a long, long, long stretch in the second half when it might have served the Bills a little bit better to not try to rely on their pass game, which, of course, is still struggling, which we'll get into a little bit later. But, you know, he had 5 touches in between the time that they come out for the third quarter and the time that the Cleveland Browns move within 6 points of the lead and sort of get themselves right back in the game with a slow, methodical drive. Maybe not the best play selection on the part of Joe Brady, but listen, when you get the ball in number 4's hand, good things happen. And that's something the Bills, as Lance pointed out, something the Bills need to keep in mind and keep front and center when it comes to their game plan as they go down the road.
Yeah, you mentioned what more can be said. I mean, let's just start with some of the historic nature of this season. He's got 1,532 rushing yards now. Not only does that lead the NFL, Jonathan Taylor is, I believe, 91 yards behind him entering Monday Night Football. So he's got a very good look at the rushing title. O.J. Simpson is the only player in Bills history who has had more rushing yards in a single season. They obviously had the 2,000-yard season, and it also had an 1,800-yard season. So Cook, probably not catching those two numbers, certainly the 2,000, maybe as an outside look with a couple of huge games at the 1,800. But either way, I mean, it is, you're talking about, you know, he passed Thurman Thomas yesterday for number three all time in single season rushing yards for the Bills. So these are some pretty, that's some lofty company that he's keeping. And where would this offense be without James Cook? You know, Josh Allen said it best after the game. James Cook should be getting consideration for whatever award there is. You know, I don't think he's not going to get MVP consideration because that's become a quarterback award, rightly or wrongly, in the NFL. But I don't know that he's getting enough love for Offensive Player of the Year. I mean, I think you can build a pretty compelling case that it should be James Cook when you look at the importance to the offense for him. Certainly, you can say the same thing about Jonathan Taylor, Jackson Smith and Njigba in Seattle, I think, has a case too. But Cook is in the running. And, you know, you're absolutely right in the sense of where would this team be, not just, you know, in the first half, but overall without James Cook this season. Without James Cook, he's gone over 100 yards rushing in 9 games, four straight on the road. To me, that might be the most impressive. 4 straight games on the road, he's gone over 100 yards. I wrote earlier this season about how this has not been a good road football team for quite a while now. And I know, you know, you can talk about the level of opponent yesterday all you want and the record, but they have now won a couple in a row here against Pittsburgh and against Cleveland on the road. And those are, you know, important wins at this point in the season. They've got to keep pace in the AFC with what's going on. And so to be able to do that, I think you have to continue to lean on Cook. We are going to mention, you know, later in the show, what's going on at wide receiver, you know, the help or the lack thereof that Josh Allen is getting in the passing game. You know, lean on what works. And to your point, Perrin, that's maybe why you'd want to see Cook even more involved after halftime. I mean, the Bills finished this game, punt, punt, field goal. That was on a short field, turnover on downs, punt, turnover on downs. So it was a slog offensively. And really the only one that had anything going when they had the football was James Cook. And that goes for Allen too, as I mentioned, which we'll get to here coming up on the next segment. All right, Perrin, we have to start by offering our thoughts and prayers to fantasy owners of Josh Allen, who absolutely were let down by their quarterback yesterday. I'll give credit to Thad Brown from Rochester TV, who tweeted this that I saw. This was the first game in Josh Allen's career that he was held to less than 150 total yards and did not score a touchdown. So if you had Allen on your fantasy team, I'm sure you're lamenting today what happened. But in all seriousness, this was a tough game for the Bills' passing offense. This was a tough game for Josh Allen. I led my observations with some very anxious moments and minutes for Bills fans at halftime because Allen leaves the field a little bit early with a foot injury. It came at the end of a very ill-advised sack. He called it a bonehead decision. Those are his words, not mine, after the game, and I agree with him. You know, just get rid of the football. You avoid the injury. You avoid the loss of field position, 22-yard loss. So it really felt like, though, from there, you know, at that point in the game, the Bills were up by 10. They had a chance to maybe add to that lead before halftime. They're getting the ball to start the third quarter. You felt like the game was, you know, was kind of in control until it wasn't. And in the astounding lack of production for the passing game is I think a main reason for that. Allen finishes, I've got the numbers here, 12 of 19 for 130 yards. About the only positive that you can draw from that performance is that he didn't throw an interception. He was sacked twice, and those lost 35 yards, as we mentioned. So I don't know which direction you want to go with this, Perrin, whether you want to get into the receivers, you want to talk about Allen in particular. I will say that, you know, you could feel it, right? When he walks to the locker room and you don't know what the situation is, I mean, that's the season hanging by a thread there, or hanging in the balance, I guess. And so, yeah, it's a relief that he comes out. He says he wasn't impacted by the injury. I wonder whether that's the case. You know, he did not rush for a single yard in the second half. And so you wonder, you know, were they limiting the play calls in terms of maybe designed rollouts because they didn't want to subject him to any more, you know, make him do more physically on that foot injury? I don't know. That's a bit speculation on my part. We'll certainly ask Joe Brady about that later today. But yeah, all in all, a very tough day for the quarterback, injury notwithstanding, and a tough day for a wide receiver group, which we have said and written and talked about kind of ad nauseum this year.
The part about the receiving core that We'll continue. The notion that we will continue to discuss the receiving core and its limitations, that's not going away. It's not going to go away until the offseason, when presumably Brandon Beam will try to make a move via the draft or free agency to address that. Which, to be fair, he did try to address that in the offseason. He tried. He got Joshua Palmer. And, of course, he took a stab at Elijah Moore, sort of low-risk, potential high-reward. Neither of those has really worked out. Of course, Palmer's been injured. Brandon Cooks, it was a smart move, a shrewd move to try to pick him up, off what amounted to the waiver wire. But you see, Brandon Cooks is not the 1,000-yard receiver that he used to be earlier in his career. And his hands suddenly disappeared. He's got, two drops on long-distance passes that would have made a big difference and would have perhaps started to open up that deep passing game that's been missing for almost the entire year for the Bills. Going back to Josh Allen, the question is, we do have to continue to take a look at that foot. And you have to wonder, it's a two-pronged thing. Okay, can they not use him on rollouts now or moving pockets and things of that nature, him moving to his right, which he likes to do so much. And then, of course, the big thing about the Bills offense is not only when Josh Allen scrambles, but of course, some of the design runs that they send him on. He's such a powerful runner, and that's such a unique part of his game in terms of what sets him apart from other quarterbacks. If it's third and two on a key down a distance somewhere in the postseason, can they count on him to just, line up in a shotgun, take the direct snap and go on what amounts to a quarterback sweep or a quarterback off tackle like they like to do so often? So that's certainly a concern. The downfield passing, it's the same. We mentioned this during the game, which is to say, this is sort of where when they're trying to either build onto the lead or finish off the Browns, this is where their lack of, I was being polite when I said their lack of above average receivers. And frankly, you have to wonder now if it's a matter of a lack of average receivers on the roster is really hurting them. And, you had Josh Allen certainly missed a couple of guys. He missed Shakir open in the flat or sort of short to intermediate route on a crosser. And if he connects with Shakir there, that's a long gain, a potential touchdown. But also he had some drops. And, of course, the big one is Cooks, and the really, really, really big one is Dawson Knox in the end zone. And Dawson Knox, I think we would all say, has pretty sure hands. And it's a play he makes probably 9 times out of 10. But, again, when you don't have not even necessarily a number one receiver, but a wide receiver who is sure-handed, big-bodied, somebody who can work in traffic down near in the red zone or in the end zone, this is where you're sort of limited. And, of course, that leads us to Keon Coleman, who was supposed to be that big body, great contested catches, maybe with a little bit more time in the NFL, would be able to gain some learn how to gain some separation against DBs. But that hasn't happened, Jay, because he is now having to tally a third inactive designation on game day. Two, just because of a DNP coach's decision, and a third because of a one-game suspension. And you wrote about this in your observations, Jay, about how you sort of now have to wonder, well, okay, are we seeing the last days of Keon Coleman here in December, January, and perhaps February with the Buffalo Bills before they decide to try to do something with him in the offseason?
It's a great question. It's one that I think we have to ask at this point, because clearly he's number five, number six on the depth chart. I mean, they had five active yesterday with Davis and Coleman being down, but Mecole Hardman was active, solely to be a punt returner. So they've really used four receivers in the game. The fact that Keon Coleman is not out there, I mean, he's had his opportunities. He played the most snaps of any receiver just the week prior against New England and didn't get a target. And he's not doing anything with the snaps that he gets. Yeah, he's blocking, like, okay, but you got Tyrell Shavers who can do that, or you got Gabe Davis who can do that. I just don't know what his role is with this team. I think they'll be ultra cautious in the offseason in terms of how they move on. If they move on from Keon Coleman, I think they'd want it to be via trade. to get something back, because, you know, you look at the Browns yesterday, he didn't play. Wyatt Teller is the cautionary tale, right? You know, Brandon Bean moves on from him. Admittedly, too soon, he goes on to become an All-Pro. Now, I don't know that anybody's going to see Keon Coleman do that, but the last thing you'd want to see happen if you're Brandon Bean, you know, you release him and he goes elsewhere and he has success. That is not going to be a good look for the Bills front office and the Bills coaching staff. So it's not an easy decision, but I think it's a conversation that we have to have because of clearly where he is on the depth chart at this point. You know, he's not in this situation if the coaching staff trusted him, if his quarterback trusted him. It can be hard to rebuild that, as I mentioned in my observations, and I don't know that it's going to happen here down the stretch. Maybe because of the astounding lack of production that they got yesterday, they say, we got to try something else, and he does get another chance. I think Gabe Davis should be active. I don't understand the thinking there. I do wonder if maybe they're just trying to limit his snaps, knowing, you know, where he's at physically coming back from injury. But I think Gabe Davis should get back on the field, and I think he's probably still – maybe he's ahead of Keon Coleman, but either way, you know, the depth chart being the way that it is, the production that they're getting, maybe they give Coleman another shot, but it's clear at this point, you know, he's nothing more than a depth option. I don't think you could say that. And, you know, that's not what he was drafted to be, is a depth option. So it's been a very, very disappointing second season all the way around for the Bills and for Keon Coleman.
So all that having been said, Jay, no matter how you slice it, as we mentioned sort of at the top of the show, the Bills are closing in with 2 more wins. The Bills are closing in on yet another 13-4 season. They play the Eagles, of course, this coming week. And then they will finish with the Jets in the final game at the Ralph with the red helmets. So that will be quite an experience for everybody. I'm sure everybody in Western New York will remember where they were when they closed out the Ralph. But in the meantime, of course, the Bills are trying to sew up a postseason berth, and they can do so as early as Monday, just as you mentioned, 8:15 p.m., 49ers at Colts, 144-year-old Philip Rivers at the controls for the Colts. The 49ers can obviously do Buffalo a favor by going on ahead and winning that game. The San Francisco is a 5.5-point favorite going into that game as we speak on Monday morning. And from there, you talk about the playoff race. Well, the Denver Broncos, despite their loss on Sunday, they still hold on to the number one seed. The Ravens were doing their best on Sunday night to try to help out the Bills and hand the Patriots another loss and keep that AFC East race a little bit more interesting than it figures to be. Jacksonville with another great win in Denver. They're sort of now very, very quietly 11-4. Trevor Lawrence having a great year. Pittsburgh holding on to the lead in the NFC North. Another winning record, another winning season now clinched for Mike Tomlin. He's never had a sub 500 season, which is pretty amazing. And then the fifth seed, the LA Chargers, they hold the tie break over the Bills based on win percentage in conference games. At the moment, the Chargers are 8-2 in conference. The Bills are 8-3 in conference. But listen, no matter how you slice it, right now the Buffalo Bills are the number 6 seed. If the playoffs were to end today, that means, in all likelihood, they're playing the Patriots. And so there you have it. They can do themselves a favor or have a favor done for themselves if the 49ers win on Monday night, rather. And then, of course, from there, you just go play ball. You know, you find out where your seating is, where your position is. Some positions, some matchups, of course, going to be greater than others. But just as you mentioned, Jay, the fact that they're starting to win on the road is certainly a good sign, because if they are to make it all the way through to Santa Clara in the Super Bowl, they're going to have to do it on the road.
Yeah, you're right, Perrin. I would just add real quick on the currently as it stands as the sixth seed, they would actually go to Jacksonville right now. The Patriots as the two
you're right.
Seed.
You're right, Jay. I'm sorry.
No, yep. Yeah, all good. But yeah, just I think it's important because, you know, you look at Houston at the seventh seed. I got a lot of thoughts here. Let's start with this. You know, we've talked. I think, you know, the idea has been that it's kind of a down year for the AFC. But all of a sudden, you look at it. Houston at the seventh seed is 10-5. Staring at the possibility of getting to 12 wins, the Bills at 11-4, the Chargers at 11-4, you're looking at the possibility of the three wildcard teams all having 12 wins. That's a really good season. You know, the Steelers at 9-6 in the playoff field actually have the worst record. But of course they're winning their division, and they actually had an impressive win yesterday on the road at Detroit to get to 9-6, stay ahead of Baltimore. So when you size up these matchups and kind of the conversation about what's the advantageous matchup or what's the road, all of these games are looking a lot tougher. Jacksonville in particular, has a real shot here at the one seed. And so, 16 weeks in now with one game left, and the field can basically be all but solidified, but the seeds are still wide open. And that includes the Bills, who are still in the running for the one seed. So they could finish anywhere from the one seed to the seven seed, where they're going to go, who looks good, who doesn't, all kind of still very much up in the air. I do still think that if the Bills are going to have to be on the road, probably that Pittsburgh in the 4-5 matchup, it would be looked at as the one that you'd maybe want, just because of, the way that the Bills played the Steelers earlier this season. I think the way that the Steelers have sort of looked most of the year. But again, as I just mentioned, they come off a really impressive victory against Detroit. And so it kind of feels like, I think what you want to be doing if you're a playoff team right now is kind of rounding into form, right? Unfortunately for the Bills, yesterday against Cleveland, they didn't necessarily do that, but neither did Houston, right? Houston struggled against the Raiders for a good chunk of that game. The Chargers looked pretty good against the Cowboys. I didn't watch much of that game, but just the score would indicate that that was a pretty comfortable win. As I mentioned, Pittsburgh, impressive win. Jacksonville is maybe the team that has most impressed me recently in the AFC. And so I just find this overall race to be really, really interesting. And, you mentioned, Perrin, we got two games left here at Highmark Stadium, probably, right? But if the Bills finish, the two seed is still out there. The one seed, there's a path even to that. I think it's very unlikely, but, they're still alive for it. If they get to the five seed, the way that the 6 and 7 seeds are playing, whether that be the Chargers or the Texans, it's not out of the realm of possibility at all that they win a game, and maybe we still see a home playoff game in Highmark Stadium. So it'll be an interesting atmosphere going into Week 18, and I know we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. We still have a big game coming up against the Eagles in Week 17, but it'll be fascinating to kind of see where this, where this race plays out, not just from a Bills perspective, but, is there an opportunity, for a home, for a home playoff game at Highmark Stadium? All of that will work itself out in due time. As you mentioned, Monday night, as soon as Monday night, the Bills could clinch if the Colts were to lose or tie to the 49ers. Obviously, we'll be watching that very closely. And Perrin and I will be back next Monday following the Bills' home game against the Eagles in Week 17 at Highmark Stadium, a 4:25 kickoff. We will be back on Monday to discuss that game, update these playoff standings in this playoff race as we just did here. In the meantime, I hope you all have a very Merry Christmas, and thanks so much for watching the latest edition of the Further Review podcast.
This is Harry the Hammer for Further Review by House Crafters. House Crafters provides complete home renovation services with one call does it all. That includes interior home services as well as windows and doors. Call 716-646-NAIL.